G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway Podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. And this is episode 214, brought to you by our Patreon members community. Without the support from our patrons, we simply would not be talking to you each and every week and bringing you these stories. And I really urge you to consider joining the Patreon community. It's been fantastic, to be honest. The members in there are having some great success via the Zoom meetings, via the content that we're putting in there. It's not only two Zoom meetings each month, it's both in the Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere. There's also bonus podcasts, discussion topics, 5-minute focus topics, audio series on everything you need for your intermittent fasting lifestyle. And it really has become a great way to get some extra layers of accountability and support. The meetings are hosted by myself, and it really has been successful. So I hope that you give it some thought. Don't sit out there struggling, or if you're just beginning, you're on the journey, or even if you're in maintenance and you want to come in and stay plugged into that community and pay it forward for others, it's a great way to do it. You'll find the link there in the show notes to join at www.patreon.com/thefastinghighway. And as again, I strongly urge you to consider it because I think it's fantastic. Okay, everybody, let's get on with today's podcast. And I'm going to be speaking with Julie Mansfield. And Julie is a local just down the road from me here in Perth, Western Australia. And Julie has been a long-term intermittent faster for over 5 years now, after some bumps in the road with her health, as you'll hear about in this podcast. But Julie truly is an inspiration, and I'm not going to spoil her story because I really want her to tell it to you. So here she is, the amazing Julie Mansfield. I know you're a long-term faster, Julie. I'm really interested in hearing what you've been up to. But for the people around the world listening to this, Julie, if you wouldn't mind going back to the beginning and maybe a bit of backstory, how you found your pathway up to intermittent fasting.
Sure, Graham. I just wanted to say it is a great honour to be on this podcast, and we've both been on quite a journey since 2020 when you launched your book, and it was a great book launch. I think you're amazing about what you've achieved. It's been really good for people to have someone to look to for support. My journey began when I was pregnant with my third daughter. I had gestational diabetes through my pregnancy, so I got a real insight to what it was like having type 1 diabetes, having to do blood sugar level tests throughout the pregnancy. It wasn't really a nice experience. And then having to go to dietitians that would kind of wrap you over the knuckles if your sugars would go up, because, you know, they kind of made you feel like you were damaging the baby inside you. So it was not a really nice time for me. I guess from that time, I just started a very intentional health journey for myself and was determined to not have type 2 diabetes after the pregnancy, because I had a history of type 2 diabetes in my family. So I was pretty much told it was inevitable that later on, when I was older, I'd have type 2 diabetes. But I managed to be really healthy through all my pregnancies, but particularly my third one. Didn't have to have any insulin or anything like that, just maintained a diet control type of regime while I was pregnant. And then after, my baby was very healthy, and she's still healthy to this day. She's just turned 17, actually. Three young children, very busy mum. And then later on, we moved over to Australia, and I guess I'd always been kind of conscious about sugar and things like that. So I guess the first part of my journey was kind of going down the rabbit hole of how to get off sugar, especially having young children. You kind of, I think, often jump to convenient food when you're on the go with young children. And I noticed that I was, you know, with my family, I was bringing in more sort of processed foods because it was just quick and they seemed to like it quickly. And, you know, I didn't have to, you know, kind of get them used to it or whatever. They just seemed to eat it more than, you know, steamed sweet potato and broccoli and things like that. So I guess, yeah, I started, you know, bringing a lot more processed food into the family. And I think, you know, I was quite aware of that. So then I started to look into going off sugar. Dr. Lustwig sort of is this doctor that's really big on demonizing sugar, which is a good thing. He's like a chemical scientist, and he goes into the detail of your metabolism. So I sort of went down the rabbit hole of all the YouTubes that I could watch of him. He's linked to a Californian university. He's done some books on, I think it's No Sugar or something. I didn't read the books, but yeah, read a lot of his articles and lectures. And I just, yeah, really went off sugar, much to my children's disgust. They really missed it in the beginning, but then they just got used to it. And, you know, today we don't, you know, really have that much sugar in the house. We're pretty good now, but it's taken a long time to get it out of my family's lifestyle for sure. I think it was a little bit later was that big sugar movie kind of movement. They had the film, the Australian guy. I've heard you sort of mention him, where he went on the kind of processed diet and saw how it affected him. So it was a little bit before that movie came out. I noticed that, like, my sugars, my because I have to get my blood sugar levels tested every year. And then every 3 years I have to get fasting glucose tested. So I noticed when we sort of migrated from Victoria over to WA, my sugars started going up, and I'd had like a lot of stresses in my life. My father passed away. We'd moved from England to Victoria, Victoria to WA, had, you know, three young children. I also was like really low in iron at the time, and I wasn't quite aware of how, you know, I wasn't quite, yeah, self-aware of how that really affected me and how I ate. I think I was always like needing to eat more because I was low in this iron. I just felt like I needed something, and I didn't realize it was because I was low in iron. So then, you know, jumping forward a bit, I had a full hysterectomy because I was just having these horrible, very long drawn out periods. You know, started kind of getting my period every 23 days, then it went down to every 17 days, and they were like really long and heavy. And I realized, I went to a gynecologist and I found out I had fibroids. So it was just a better outcome if I just had a hysterectomy. But I kept my ovaries because it's only really if you have cancer you need to take out the ovaries. So I had my ovaries, so I didn't go straight into menopause. Did it, and then I thought, I'm never doing anything like that again. And then I felt even more desperate because I'd lost, like, you know, 5 or 6 kilos or something in 40 days. And I just felt so desperate. And, you know, I was trying to do the gaining back, like you slowly add in more food. And, you know, that's how you sort of came off the diet. But I just put all the weight back on, basically, just desperately looking around. And I came across Jason Fung's book, Diabetes Code, which, you know, I would say, you know, reading that probably changed and saved my life for good. So thank you, Dr. Fung. That was good. They were very supportive. But I knew after a while it just wasn't for me, the long fast. I knew it wasn't sustainable. I knew I couldn't just do a long fast, then, you know, kind of eat 3 meals a day or whatever, and then do a long fast again. It was just, I just don't think it like really made my body feel good. And I'd been, you know, listening to my body for a while now, and I knew when I felt good and I knew when I didn't, because I had finally got my iron levels up after having my hysterectomy and everything. And I thought, oh, I'm not feeling good again. What's going on here? I've got my iron levels up. It must be this long fasting. But I knew I felt good on fasting. I knew there was something about it. And I definitely enjoyed keeping the weight off, but just didn't. I think if it's not working for you, then you're doing it wrong. It's not necessarily you're doing the wrong thing, but you're doing it wrong. So I looked more into it, and then I heard some people chatter on this long fasting Facebook group about Jean Stevens. So looked her up and started listening to her podcasts. And she was the one that taught me about clean fasting, because with the long fast you have, you know, homemade bone broth and things like that. So she was talking about the clean fasting and just the stories, especially with, you know, women that have kind of gone through the same things as me, you know, young children, low iron, you know, really resonated with me, all the stories. And then I realized I kind of, you know, needed a community, and I needed a stories. Stories are so important, especially me having a background in family therapy. Family stories is just so important to share with your family and with your community. So I guess this, I just knew that this was the right place for me to kind of be supported. I still listen to the stories today on Jin's podcast, and your stories as well, of course, Graham. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's how I kind of came to intermittent fasting.
Fabulous. Gee, you've been through the middle of it. You know, it's been a long journey, yeah, hasn't it, for you? And a few ups and downs along the way and a few challenges there. And the good news is, Julie, you've come through the other side, and I'm really glad that you picked up that book by Dr. Fung. And as you say, it's really helped you, and if you say you've changed your life and saved your life, I mean, that's fantastic, because the world's a better place with you here, Julie. But, you know, when you first came to fasting and you started doing intermittent fasting, like, just what sort of protocol were you doing and how did you start?
Yeah, so I'll start with intermittent fasting. I don't really want to talk about the extended fasting. I mean, I will share with you the longest fast I did was 9 days.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just would not recommend that. So, but yes, I have done long fasting, but I'd rather just start with the intermittent fasting, because for me that is my happy place, and I want to share that with everyone. So, yeah, I think when I started, I was coming from that long fasting kind of journey. So to do 24 hours was absolutely nothing to me. I definitely had exercised my fasting muscles prior to starting intermittent fasting. But the new thing was, of course, I was doing clean fasting. So I felt even better during the fast. And I felt like on speed, you know, I felt really geared up to achieve my goals for the day. It reminded me of like a long time ago in the beginning for me, because of course I had my blood sugar levels going a bit high. And so when I started intermittent fasting, I was definitely, you know, insulin resistant. So for me, it was kind of going into that sort of ketosis in the beginning. I was very, very, yeah, almost couldn't stop talking, almost like I had ADHD or something. You know, I just couldn't stop talking and I was just really wired up, and had lots of energy, got lots of things done. But I think it didn't take too long to sort of for that to settle down. But I do remember that quite strong feeling when I first started doing it. You know, my body was kind of switching into fat burning mode. I used to like really feel that quite physically. But yeah, I think it was pretty much doing OMAD in the beginning. I didn't do 3 days or anything like that. I was really enjoying being able to eat every day. So I started with OMAD.
Yeah. Were you doing something like 16 and 8, or what was the sort of hours or roughly that you were doing? Can you remember, or was it too long ago?
I was doing it like giving myself an hour, half an hour to eat.
Yeah. So like 23 and 1, something like that.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's great. And Julie, when you first started fasting, you mentioned you got the message of that clean fast from reading Jin's materials and listening to her podcast and so forth. Were you delaying anything, or were you eating all the things? Did you change your diet much in terms of, I know you said you got the sugar, we're on that journey of getting the sugar out of your life, but when you first started intermittent fasting, what was your sort of diet like? I know people like to know that.
Yeah, look, my diet has changed a lot. When I first started, you know, back in 2018, it was still... I was still including foods with artificial sweeteners in it. Then I didn't feel like I was kind of delaying donuts or puddings or anything like that, because I, you know, cut that out years ago. But it was more, you know, having a Diet Coke and, you know, or a Pepsi Max. You know, I used to kind of rely on those when I was doing those, like, long fast. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, I need to have my Diet Coke or my Pepsi Max, you know, in my window, and then I'll, you know, maybe I'll have that on the way home from work, and then when I get home I'll have my dinner and then I'm done, sort of thing. So, and for dinner I would have been having just what I cook for the kids, so it'd be pasta or, you know, something like that. So I wasn't as mindful as I am now of having lots of, you know, variety of food, lots of fruit and veg, whole foods, real foods. You know, I still eat pasta, rice, bread. There's nothing I exclude from my diet, but I will say I have stopped drinking alcohol and I have stopped eating a lot, like I eat a lot less meat. I probably eat, you know, meat as in chicken, fish, I mean, not fish, chicken, you know, red meat. I kind of stop. Only eat that 3 or 4 times a year. I just basically eat fish and seafood now. Yeah, right. It's just the way I've found, like, because we become so intuitive, Graham, when we, you know, fast, we just know what feels good when we do eat, because, you know, it's such a special time and a mindful time when we are eating that, yeah. And it was my daughter, actually, my oldest daughter, that got me onto the fish and seafood. I just realized, yeah, that we're both, we felt really good just eating that.
Yeah, it's funny how our tastes change, don't they, over time, I think, with an intermittent fasting lifestyle. You know, when I go back to what I was eating to what I eat now. But for me, it's just about complementing that fast and making sure in my eating window. And as you've heard me say many, many times in this podcast, and I'll say it again, I eat what makes me feel my greatest, because I know when I finish that food that I feel energized and I feel good. I don't feel like crap. And I don't go to bed rolling around, not being able to sleep and that sort of thing. So it took me a process of learning what my trigger foods were. Have you sort of worked that out over the past few years, Julie, about what the foods are that don't love you back now?
Yeah, exactly. I would say it would be alcohol. You know, I have it special occasions. I don't not eat anything. There's nothing on my list of what I don't eat, you know, but I just eat less of it, much, much, much less of it. And that was the also thing about the seafood and the fish I wanted to say, is that I find when I eat seafood and fish, I always complement it with lots of vegetables. Whereas I used to just have, if I had bacon, I'd have just a bacon sandwich. I wouldn't have a bacon and salad, you know, sort of thing. Whereas if I see fish or seafood in my mind for dinner, I think, oh, I'm going to have like a really big coleslaw with that, or, you know, so I just find that's why those foods complement me, because when I think about those foods or the things I drink, you know, like I still drink black coffee in my eating drink black coffee in my eating window. I don't just have milk in it. You know, because I just sort of see those things of, oh, the black coffee is really going to complement when I am eating. It's not going to kind of upset me having my coleslaw and my, you know, my fish. It's sort of, I just sort of picture it. I'm a real kind of visual person. So I guess when I think of my food or on my plate for the night ahead or whatever, I sort of think, oh, yeah, I'm going to have fish and there's going to be, you know, lots of veg on there. And if I want to have a warm drink that night, it's going to be probably black coffee. I might have like a green tea after with my husband when we're kind of, you know, sitting down and chatting of an evening. Yeah, it's sort of, I get these great positive visual images now of like what my food's going to look like and how that's going to, you know, really make me feel good after I've had it and during, while I'm having it. But, you know, the alcohol, I know that if I have, say, a glass before I have my dinner, like I might have a gin and tonic or something, I know that once that, you know, nice feeling of that alcohol wears off, I'm going to probably maybe feel a bit hungry. And also I know that during the night, I'm probably going to wake up at 2 a.m. feeling a bit dehydrated. I'll have been in a deep sleep, but I'll just kind of wake up and I'll get back to sleep. But that's just from one drink. So I sort of think, well, why would I do that every night? I'm not going to do that every night.
You've just worked out your trigger foods, and alcohol was, you know, a beverage that was triggering you. So you took it out and you've thrived since. So sometimes we have to do these things to find out, you know, what happens with them. And you mentioned here your battles with sugar and that sort of thing, and, you know, slowly getting that out of not only your own life, but out of the household there, and having that conversation with the kids and saying, hey, listen, you know, mum's not going to go shopping and bringing home all the sugar anymore. And the kids were like protesting with signs and saying, you know, sack mum and all that sort of thing. But, you know, you got through that and you changed your household, and it must have really done well for all of them, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing how I just sit back now and watch their choices have all stemmed from, you know, obviously the way they've eaten at home. And, you know, we go out to dinner and they just want to, you know, have tap water. You know, I still sort of go, no, you can have any drink you like it's okay, we're out for dinner. And they're like, no, tap water's fine, mum. And I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, just very different to, you know, I used to work at a high school, Graham, and I'd see kids come to school and they'd be have those disgusting like Gatorade type drinks with the caffeine in them, and my heart would just sink, you know, that was their kind of breakfast. Yeah, it was hard in the beginning because I just found it hard to change it in your mind about treats. You're always thinking about treats and praise and how am I going to like acknowledge my kids? I love them so much, you know, and you'd be out getting the afternoon tea. And then I realized like I just didn't, it just didn't, it was really hard to find like quick grab things, you know. You go to Baker's Delight or, you know, any kind of bakery or supermarket, it's very kind of hard unless you go straight to the, you know, fruit and veg section. So I used to just start bringing them home like lip balms, or I'd bring them home, you know, little kids' magazines, because I used to do editorial publishing on magazines in the UK. And, you know, gosh, there used to be 1,000 titles of magazines in the UK, but over here it's pretty slim now, especially everything online. But I used to get those little, you know, kids' magazines with the little, you know, toy at the front, and or I'd get them like when I was in the UK, I used to bring home little Barbie dolls because they were at the supermarket, you could buy Barbie dolls. So, yeah, I just had to kind of switch in my head how I kind of showed my love and just change the habits instead of bringing home the chocolate and the chips and things like that.
Yeah, well, you actually are doing great favor, and you're also showing them love by showing them the healthy way and setting an example, Julie. That's what I think, you know, and it does break my heart. And look, I'm the most least judgy person in the world, right? But when I go to the supermarket sometimes and I see very heavy or obese kids walking around with their parents and they're doing the shopping and they're just throwing and all this stuff, and I'm just going, man, it just breaks my heart, you know. And you can't go and say anything to them. It's not my business, but you know, and I don't judge them for it because they're probably doing what you used to do, show the kids the love by doing that, right? Or the kids' behavior was controlled by giving them that sort of stuff, and then it just got worse and worse. So yeah, congratulations on that. So do you feel you've got the sugar genie well and truly back in the bottle now?
Oh yeah, there's seafood and fish, Graham. Who needs sugar?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like if you can step away from the sugar aisle and find those alternatives and find some stuff that you truly love or grow to love. And I know there was a lot of foods that I used to think, who eats those things? I mean, who eats avocados? I remember thinking that I was at this picnic at South Perth that you know, Julie, and it was a fireworks day, and this lady said to me, do you want some avocado, Graham? And I was looking at it and I was thinking, what sort of weirdos eat avocado at a picnic? You know, and I just thought avocados were the worst things out. And now I absolutely love them. It's really odd. And things like broccoli, I used to hate broccoli. Now I love it. And there's so many things that I found that are great alternatives to the chips and the fast food and the lollies and the ice cream and all cakes and slices that I was eating before, that now I can just walk into Coles and go to the fruit section and get something there for a snack for, you know, afternoon tea or whatever it may be. But yeah, I felt a bit guilty about not buying that sort of stuff for my kids, or you know, going to the bakery and just getting bread and not getting any treats. But the truth was, when I was buying the treats, I was really getting them for myself and masking that by giving them to everybody else around me.
You know, have that talk to yourself and go, it's actually you that you know you're going to have it later.
Yeah, it's like
So
when the
yeah, that's
yoga.
exactly right.
Oh, hey, I'm going past the bakery. Would anybody like a treat?
Yeah.
You full well that
I
you just wanted that excuse to go there, right? I mean, that's behavior of a
that's
person.
right. That's so true. I just
Yeah.
like you send the text home to the kids. I'm just at the shops. What shall I get? It's kind of like,
Yeah.
oh, I hope they say, oh, you know, some crisps, please, Mum. I'm like, oh yes. Did you used to
Love.
listen to your on your podcast about the eating in the car? I mean, I never did that, but it was so funny, Graham, how you can just put a thought into your head, like plant that seed. I found myself, because I started a job and I had a 50-minute drive there and back. And I'd been, you know, obviously listening to your podcasts in the past. I only started the job like a year ago. I usually like had a 6-minute drive to car, so drive to work. So it was like 50 minutes was, you know, wow, what am I going to do with 50 minutes? But the amount of times it crossed my mind to go and get a packet of crisps at the garage on the way home and just snack on that was unbelievable. Like I can't believe, and that's just because I heard your stories. I'm not blaming you, Graham. I'm just saying like how you can kind of get a thought in your head and it just stay there for a little bit because you don't know what to do with this time. You haven't worked out what your pattern is. And I so could have like, you know, justified myself having just a, you know, a packet of crisps on the way home. It's 50 minutes. That'll be okay. I'll just do it once. But then, you know, you do it once and next minute you're doing it every day. So yeah, I just, it's such a powerful thing to kind of have those thoughts and like really be that honest talk we were saying about, you know, when you go to the bakery and you get it for the kids for afternoon tea. It's the same thing. You have that honest talk with yourself and you just go, well, no, I'll listen to a podcast and I'll get petrol in the morning on the way to work where I, you know, you wouldn't get a packet of crisps or whatever. So you just like protect yourself, set yourself up with kind of boundaries that protect you.
Yeah, distractions are good, aren't they? And it's, you know, and also drawing into those whys too, Julie, when you have those thoughts and, oh, maybe I'll stop and get some chips, or maybe I'll stop and get some ice cream or something like that. But then when you read into your whys, and I always say to people, write down your whys, even if you have to carry them around a little card or something, because when you have those moments, you can pull that card out if you're at the supermarket or you're at the bakery or wherever it may be, and you get that thought that that's what you want to do and you're going to derail yourself. Well, sometimes when you look at those whys, and, you know, I have a lot of whys in my life now that are a bit different to when I first started. So let's talk about your whys exactly. I mean, you mentioned there about the sugar thing and some of the issues you had with diabetes and many other things, but you also have three kids, right? And they're obviously going to go on to lead long lives. And longevity for me was a big why. Is that a why for you as well, Julie?
Yeah, I think, you know, life goes so quickly and your kids grow up so fast in front of your eyes that you start to realize that, especially, you know, when your parents start, you know, my father passed away, my mum's 94, so, and still with us. So definitely some longevity genes in my family. But, and, you know, my parents were always so very concerned of their health. They were very kind of health conscious, always kind of at the front of their mind was they want to be as healthy as they can so that, you know, their sort of senior years aren't, you know, more difficult than need be. And I think, you know, that's the same with me now that my kids are growing up so fast before my eyes. I don't, you know, you don't want to be a burden on your kids. You don't want to miss anything because you can't walk down the stairs to get into the car anymore. You know, you want your mobility to be as good as possible for as long as possible. So it's definitely just staying healthy is the main goal so that you can enjoy the years with your family for as long as possible.
Yeah, 100%. I don't want to get around in the mobility scooter or frame and that type of thing. You know, for me, that's game over. You know, your quality of life is really diminished so much. And I have a lot of great things ahead of me to do. You know, I'm only relatively still a young man. I mean, I say I'm 60, and I still think 60 is young if you're fit and healthy. And, you know, we've got a good 20 years of living, and I'm going to be able to do some great hikes around the world. I want to go to New Zealand, do the great hikes. I want to go to America and do some hikes, Canada. And I want to show the way and show people that it's possible to live your life as a fit and healthy person after overcoming a lot of things with food and alcohol and all sorts of things, and get on your journey and show everybody in the world that you can do it and lead by example. And I think that's what we're trying to do for our families as well, Julie, and them knowing that their mum is healthy and that she's going to be around for a long time must really fill their heart with joy. That's all I can say about that. But Julie, we talk about the non-scale victories and the health benefits. I know you've touched on a couple of those, but the non-scale victories for you and the health benefits, how have they been? I mean, you've been doing this for quite a few years now. What, about 6 years you've been fasting now?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, look, I think with intermittent fasting, my non-scale victories would be definitely, I've just got a much more positive, upbeat kind of feeling vibe about me now. I find, you know, if I was kind of getting stressed about things in life, you'd have that honesty talk to yourself. And a lot of it would be because I just wasn't happy that I wasn't healthy, you know. But now that I'm feeling healthy, I'm feeling great, I just feel like everything else I can enjoy to a bit more of an upbeat level. It's hard to describe, Graham, but it, you know, it really is life-changing. And it's a great change. It's a fantastic change. And, you know, I would say, like, if you're fasting and you're not enjoying your fasting time, like your fasting window, you're doing it wrong, because there's just so many things to enjoy out there while you're fasting. If you're feeling like really miserable, you just got to like work it out so it's not miserable for you, because it really is just such a great thing to do for yourself, an important thing to kind of keep in mind that you should be enjoying it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And just, you know, the distractions and that sort of thing, like you said, of going out and enjoying yourself. You know, I know during the week when I'm working, it's fairly easy. On the weekends, it is a little bit harder. I've got to say, even after all this time, I would admit, and, you know, but it's not super hard. And what's the difference between being obese and not being obese? Well, it's a case of picking your heart, isn't it? And I know which one was hard, and that was being obese. And so when I dig into my whys that I talked about before, I can overcome that feeling of a bit of struggle, you know. And I think some days are different to others, aren't they? I mean, some days I don't really, now after all these years, I don't really think that I'm fasting. Julie, do you wake up in the morning and think, hey, I'm fasting? I don't even think about it anymore. I think after a few years of this, you don't actually wake up every day and think that you're even fasting.
Yeah, look, that's really interesting that you say that, because I go through phases. I do, especially when I'm doing OMAD, I don't think about it at all. But when I'm doing ADF, because I flip from one to the other, I do think about it, but it's more in a positive lens. So I think, wow, today I'm fasting all day, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I agree with you, it's so much easier if you've got the structure of work. You don't even think about it then, because you're busy at work. But yeah, on the weekends, I just, you know, keep busy. But I am kind of aware of it, because I still feel that great energy, you know, and I know I am conscious of it, and I am thinking about the fasting. I guess I'm not thinking about, oh, I can't have this, I'm not going to be able to have that, oh, darn it, you know, I'm missing out on this today. Everyone's having a really nice pasta for lunch or something. I don't kind of think about that anymore. I am still thinking about it, but just with a more positive, upbeat lens, more like, oh, I'm going to go to the beach. Like this morning, I'm eating today, so I've got to make sure, you know, and I'm fasting tomorrow, so I've got to make sure that, you know, I fit in at least a couple of meals today. So I'm not used to having like breakfast. I just, you know, I'm not hungry, I'm not whatever, but I know that if I don't like really nourish myself today, then it's not going to be a good fast for me tomorrow. So it's important for me for my up day to be, you know, a proper one. So I went for a walk with my dog in the bush along the coast, and then I dropped my dog off, and then I went back to the beach and I swam, you know, because I didn't have my work today to distract me. So I had to like make sure that I was setting myself up to really, when I did eat, I was really going to enjoy it. So I had a little snack by the coast, had a halloumi and egg and spinach wrap or something, and then came home and got ready for here. I've been like really busy today, and I guess I haven't been thinking about the food, and I haven't been thinking about, you know, certainly not thinking about my fasting tomorrow, but I guess what I'm trying to say is inwardly I'm like really enjoying, you know, whether I'm fasting or whether I'm eating, I'm really enjoying kind of what it's doing for my body. I'm really enjoying like the fasting. I'm really enjoying that feeling like you really are just like resetting your body. And and inflammation, it's so calming on inflammation. I mean, talking of, you know, non-scale victories, the decrease in inflammation in my body has been amazing. Amazing, like in my face, the puffiness is gone. No hay fever. Used to get hay fever. When I had my hysterectomy, I healed incredibly fast, so much to the case that my gynecologist, when she did a review 2 weeks after my op, her jaw literally dropped, and she said, oh my goodness, you have healed so well. So I guess, yeah, I kind of do think about fasting, but yeah, not in the way that you were meaning, Graham. So yeah,
I get it. Yeah, sometimes, like you mentioned there, ADF, how long have you been tinkering with that? And Run us through that. Are you doing the up day, down day thing? So you're not eating it all one day, then up on the other, or the 500 calorie, or how do you roll with that? And what was the reason why you went to ADF?
Yeah, I went to ADF. The reason would have been, I would say, is I would have possibly got an increase in my blood sugar levels. It's usually to do with my blood sugar levels if I change something up, and I would have got some results back where it might have gone up a bit. So, again, to me, it's all about talking about non-scale victories, trying to stabilize my hormone levels. You know, insulin's a hormone. So we want to get that inflammation down, try and stabilize those hormones. So to me, I just felt like, oh, maybe because now I'm in menopause, maybe I should, you know, try and see if ADF would help. And to me, it has helped. And the reason why I know that it's helped is not just by my blood sugar levels coming back down, but also I just felt so much better. So much better. It's really made me feel a lot stronger, yeah. You know, healthier, like more energy. Like when I do my yoga, I feel like, yeah, there's kind of more strength. I've put on muscle. It's really, really helped me, ADF. So I guess, yeah, it was really just to try and help my hormones kind of level. I just do, you know, between 36 and 42-hour fast. And then I don't have a 500-calorie meal, mini meal or whatever. I just fast all the way through with black coffee, black tea, water, hot water, cold water, sparkling water, all those things. I stay active. I do 90-minute yoga sessions. Shout out to my amazing yoga instructor, Andrea. She's Yoga Bliss in the northern suburbs. She's amazing. I've been going to her for 13 years. I got her into fasting, actually, Graham. So, we share that. And it's kind of, it's like trying to fit at least 2 to 3 meals in.
So let's talk about maintenance for a minute now. I know for me, it brought more challenges. It brought different mindset sort of shift for me. How has maintenance been for you, Julie? Or do you feel like you're firmly in maintenance at the moment?
Yeah, maintenance is a funny word. Kind of, I used to think it meant like, oh, you just went back to OMAD or 2MAD or something, you know, you could just take the reins right off. And so I think when I first thought, oh, yeah, I'm in maintenance, I kind of did that and, of course, put the weight straight back on. Well, started to, didn't put it all back on. So then I knew, no, that's not what maintenance is for me, that's for sure. Maintenance is kind of maintaining what I'm doing already and learning how to make it work for me. And yeah, it does take time. And you're definitely right. It is just as hard, but, you know, not the same hard as when you first start IEP.
Yeah, just I think it's just
different kind of hards. Yeah.
Just a different mental shift, isn't it? Because you get to that point where you get the weight off your body and then you go, what now? What's next? You know, how long is this going to go for? I mean, am I going to do this for life? Is this good? And then you got to sort of work out a protocol that's going to be sustainable for you to be able to do that. And I knew that 23-1 obviously wasn't sustainable for me to be able to stay in maintenance and enjoy my life the way I wanted to. So I wanted to find something that had some flexibility. So I decided to do 22-2 during the week. And then 16-8s on the weekend. And now I think after several years of doing this, I'm moving to that stage of being more intuitive about my fasting, whereas I'll get to the point in a day where I just go, you know, it's time to eat now. So I'll eat my food. I'll eat, you know, as I say, eat what makes me feel my greatest till I'm satisfied and full, not stuffed. And I feel good and satiated. I've had all the great stuff that I need to have. And I'll do the same thing the next day. So that's pretty simple for me. I like to keep things simple. Julie, are you a simple person when it comes to your intermittent fasting lifestyle?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely keep it simple is my motto. And if it's, yeah, as I said, like if it's not kind of working for you or it's not simple for you, then you're just doing it wrong. You just got to rethink it. And that's where, you know, the community is so important, because you can kind of, you know, reach out to them and get ideas. And that's why the podcasts, the story podcasts, yours and Jin's, are so important, because, you know, it gives you ideas.
Yeah, and I think if you tweak things, if you're finding it hard and you just make those tweaks and, you know, tweak it till it's easy, as they say, and, you know, and just find a protocol that works for you and a place for you in that intermittent fasting lifestyle that fits, and it fits your life, because that's important too, that it has to fit your life. And obviously you're a mum with three kids. You were pretty busy, Julie, and working as well and trying to do everything else. In the middle of that, we had a pandemic for a couple of years here where we weren't as affected in Western Australia as most of the world was in terms of cases and deaths, but we were basically cut off from the rest of the world because we were the most isolated, you know, capital city in the world. And I found that tough for a couple of years. So I didn't see my friends and family overseas. How did you handle that period?
Oh, yeah, gosh. I mean, you just have to look on my happy scale to see how that affected me. Gee, I had some huge sort of, I don't know if everyone's used the happy scale, but basically it's, you know, you get on it every day and it's an app on your phone and it kind of goes by colors on the graph. And so I could look over, you know, 2019, 2020, and wow, those big red peaks, you know, on my graph over COVID, the stress, just not knowing, like, oh my God, is, you know, our family business just going to go down the toilet? Are we going to lose our house? You know, we had to, you know, put our mortgage, you know, on pause for a few months. You know, we couldn't, we were really worried about just putting, you know, food on the table. You know, we were like everybody, just so affected, and, you know, elderly mum over the other side of the country, and she was always in the hot spots in Victoria, so, you know, still walking around at an elderly age. So it's just, yeah, huge, huge effects. And that, you know, just looking at those graphs on my happy scale, you just sort of see how stress does affect and inflame your body.
Amazing, isn't it, how stress can do that to us? And that certainly was a stressful time. I managed to get through it pretty well in terms of my weight and everything else, because that was the only thing I could control at the time. And I always say to people, no matter what sort of life events happen to you, the one thing you can control is your fasting. And I know that when stressful times come and people lose people and, you know, grief and that sort of thing, it can be so stressful. But if you can at least control one thing that's going on around you, then it's okay. You'll get through it and give yourself some grace. And it's okay if you sort of slip back a bit. You know, we've got the tools to be able to get back on the track and, you know, pick it up from where we left off. So, Julie, you've been amazing today. I really can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. And it's been great to talk to a local here in Perth as well. But just some final words of wisdom from you. And if you're sitting around there in a cafe up at the beach with some friends and family, and they're saying, hey, Julie, you look fantastic, which you do. And, you know, how am I going to get going with this intermittent fasting thing?
I'd say thanks. I am feeling great. I'll take that compliment. And I'd also say, go to the library, get yourself a, you know, Jin Stevens fasting book, or buy it online. Go and read, you know, Dr. Fung's got the obesity code. Go and read the obesity code. But, you know, I highly recommend diabetes code. And, you know, just find out about fasting and start slow. Start slow and be really, really kind to yourself, because that control you were talking about, Graham, is so reassuring that you can always just keep your fasting up. And that's one thing you can control, and it's free. So I would say, you know, it's yours, but, you know, make it your own and just go gently with yourself.
Yeah, great advice, Julie. I think that's so good. You know, just give yourself grace, go gently, take it slowly. You know, you're changing a lifestyle here. You're not on a diet. This is the thing. Like when you first start intermittent fasting, you've got your whole life ahead of you to do this. But Julie, as I said, thank you again for coming on the Fasting Highway podcast today. Thoroughly enjoyed it. My best wishes to yourself, your family, your mum that's 94 there, your yoga instructor, Andrea, up there in the northern suburbs at Yoga Bliss. Andrea, yeah, and everybody else that's keeping you on the straight and narrow, because as I said, the world's a better place with you in it, Julie. So keep on inspiring, and thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway.
Thanks, Graham. Much love to you all.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, thank you so much, Julie, and thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway today and sharing your experience, and an experience that has been a long-term intermittent faster for over 5 years. A wealth of knowledge there, and thank you for coming on and helping our members get motivated and seeing that it is possible to make this lifestyle sustainable for the long term. Also, folks, if you are interested in my own story with my intermittent fasting journey, you will find that in my book on Amazon, The Fasting Highway. You can get that in both paperback and Kindle. If you want the audio version, you'll find that on audiobooks.com, Kobo, Spotify, and any number of other audiobook platforms. It's not on Audible, but it's on about 20 others, so you'll find it easy enough. That's The Fasting Highway audiobook. Okay, folks, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.